I guess I can see why the Buddha's teachings were not put down to writing until many centuries later. He didn't have to deal with something like this. So we're fortunate that we have this now. Good morning. So we sit in the silence of an early Sunday morning, sitting here during the week on Wednesdays and Thursdays, and then sitting this morning, I sense the difference in the environment. It's quieter, less cars on the road when we first began the initial Zazen period. So we sat in silence. And in that space of silence, we share our breath. And can we hear it? Can we really hear and can we really see what's in front of us, moment to moment? And as we engaged in the memorial service, I was aware of invoking Kanseon, in remembrance of a loved one. Our voices rise in unison and invoke that Bodhisattva compassion, Kanseon. And in my tradition, which is the lineage of Suzuki Roshi, we always chant Kanseon in Japanese, so I never knew the English translation until I started sitting with the Sangha. So in, Mazumi Roshi's lineage, there's also the Japanese and the English, which is a wonderful thing to, it's like, oh, what am I actually chanting? And there's a line in the English translation that struck me. And it struck me precisely this morning, even though we didn't chant it in English, which it says, joyful, pure, eternal being. Joyful, pure, eternal being. And that kept resonating for me, and I wonder why, because that's not at all what I wanted to talk about this morning. What I had planned on talking about, was about death and friendship, and in particularly about a friend of mine that I found out died a week ago. A week ago Tuesday, I found out she had died. She actually died the 8th of October this past year, and her name is Annette Swider. And she lived outside of Washington, D.C. And as I think about what I thought I would talk about and what is present for me, this line, joyful, pure, eternal being, seems to make a connection. So a week ago, this past Tuesday, I was sitting at the front desk of the Life Center, and Amraku Sensei let me know that there was an envelope from Gampo Abbey, that there was some mail for me. And I had just spent the last year, most of the last year at Gampo Abbey, and leaving there at the end of January. So what arose for me is like, oh, the director must be sending some pictures. So during a break of, I was attending to the phones that morning. I went and opened this big envelope, and what I expected to see was a group photo of the end of the monastic retreat that ended in January, and we were both part of, Araku Sensei and I. So I opened this envelope, and there's no picture. Inside, there's another envelope, yellow, smaller, with the remittance was Robert Powell, and I knew immediately that Annette had died. Robert is her husband. And I wanted to talk about Annette because of how I was impacted by receiving that news, right? Which surprised me. And it surprised me because Annette and I had a many years of friendship, maybe close to 10 years of friendship. We wrote often, right? Sharing very significant parts of our lives. But Annette and I never met. I never was able to look into her eyes, in sharing what we shared, or her into mine. I heard her voice once on the phone. We had one phone conversation in these years. And yet, seeing that she, receiving the news and the copy of the program of her memorial, which actually it said in celebration of Annette, there was this overwhelming grief, to the point that it manifested in the body. It was like not only like first there was like, oh, because I went in between phone calls to the back of the Life Center to open because I thought I would see my Gampu Abbey friends in this envelope. And then it's like, oh. And then the phone rang. So it was sort of a delayed reaction. And then my body just felt this pain. And the thought that kept arising, right? So there was the reality of experiencing the loss and the emotion, and this thought just kept going, but you never met her, but you never met her, you never met her, you never met her. It's almost like the mind was trying to assimilate what the body so knowingly was experiencing. There was a loss of someone, of another being, significant. Whether we ever exchange a glance or not. So I just want to tell you briefly how this friendship came to be, hearing in the poem, the sprout. Close to 10 years ago, I was in Washington, D.C., co-leading a retreat for Mankind Project, a group of men and some women. And a few days after that retreat ended, I went back home to San Francisco, and I received, I don't recall if it was a call or an email from Robert. And he said, my wife, Annette, would like to write you. Would that be okay with you? She'd like to correspond with you. And it was one of those odd requests I've never gotten before, And I said, sure, And he says, but I need to tell you, she doesn't do email, right? I said, okay, and so can she have your mailing address? So I send it to him. And shortly after that, I received a first correspondence from Annette, where she explains she didn't do emails, and she likes ink to paper. And it was like, oh, how refreshing. And her correspondence, and so I responded to that. She was just, I don't even remember what that first correspondence was about. But she did say, you know, Robert came home speaking about me leading the retreat. And she was intrigued about, you know, who this woman was. And so she just followed through in finding out more. So I responded, and then shortly after that I turned 50 and I received this big box, and there was this beautiful doll made out of corn husk. It's an indigenous doll from the Smithsonian, with the whole history and the whole a piece of who the artist was. And it explained that in indigenous culture, native women, 50 is a transition age, and that women are given these dolls. And the doll had a shawl, beautiful handmade shawl with a bundle. And it was like, wow, you know, it blew me away. It's like, again, this is someone I don't know. This is a very precious gift. So I responded to that, you know. And it, her letters were she was very prolific. And soon after that, each of her letters or cards had dozens of photographs of her garden. You know. And her garden was her life. So I would know everything about the garden, you know. And the seasons revolved, you know, when she wrote. And actually, I understand now from Robert, the garden, you know, will be like public, for, you know, as long as he's there for people to come. She would send pictures of her statues, and would tell me about these plans, and when the snow winter was in here, and what happened to the garden, you know. And at some point through this exchange, I at times I would feel like, oh, you know, why does she write so much, you know? Because I just couldn't go to the email and send her a quick response, you know. It actually required of me to sit down, create some space, take my pen to paper, and respond. Right. And this went on over and over the years. Right. At one point, I realized that I was corresponding with someone that I didn't know anything about. And the exchanges were very much about the present. This is what's happening now. This is where she went. This is what happened with her family. When she and Robert would go every summer, late summer, to vacation in the Outer Banks of North Carolina, she would write about that. She went out with her girlfriends, you know, around her birthday. There was a passing in her family. She would write about that and send me the program and everything. So I asked her one day, and I said, I don't know how I framed it, but it's like, you know, what do you do? And her response was, I retired from the spy business. Yeah. And I pondered that, and I thought, oh my gosh, she's a secret agent, you know, CIA. You know? And I remember it sitting in my room in San Francisco, like reading this and thinking, wow. Yet it, I didn't feel the need to like ask her about that in the next letter, you know. I retire from the spy business, you know. Nothing else was said. But I would talk to her about me continuing to train in Zen as a Zen priest, my upcoming Shuso ceremony, and then I would talk about after the Shuso ceremony, you know, and continuously, you know, there was this, I might have started this friendship with Annette before I even received Tokudo, you know. So there were these significant moments in my life, milestones, that I would share with her, you know, when I started going to Gampo Abbey, you know, I remember once she sent me a gift. It was Shundo Ayama Roshi's book, Zen Seeds. You know, she said, I thought that might have been the Tokuda present. I thought you might like that. Then she sent me this other beautiful book, and had it autographed by the author, who's a Zen priest. And it's a book of just small verses with beautiful drawings, you know. And most recent, when His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama was in Washington, D.C., receiving the Congressional Medal of Honor from the United States, I got this big fat package with all the clippings from the Washington Post. I never would have even, you know, I knew he was up there doing that, but I never would have really known in depth what happened there. So, in addition to her photographs of her garden, her correspondence was always filled with timely, appropriate New Yorker cartoons. Oh, I would open, there was a cartoon, and whatever the caption was on that cartoon, it had to do with something I was going through in my life, you know? And they always had some kind of Zen Buddhist flavor to it. So as her letters got more and more and more, the pile of letters got more and more and more, as I was getting rid of a lot of things to move to the East Coast, I would answer each letter because I wanted the letter right in front of me, and I would respond to whatever was there. Then I thought, well, I don't need this anymore. And at some point, three years ago or so, I received a phone call from Robert. There was a message on my voicemail after I'd been traveling for some time, that Annette's cancer had returned. And in the process of treating this recurrence, there'd been some other complications or ailments that have arisen. Right? She might have had a stroke, you know, and something was happening in her body. Right? But yet she came through that. And again, her correspondence continued, and she sent me all the details of everything. There was now, she didn't do emails, which was still confirmed by Robert last week, but she allowed him to receive emails of people inquiring about her. So Annette struggled with breast cancer for 15 years. And here I thought this was a person who, oh, it's only me she's writing to, right? I felt so special. But in talking with Robert and reading what was written about her, I realized there were lots of people that might have felt very special. He just shared a story where a woman called asking for Annette just in February. And there was a woman that was part of her support group, cancer support group, and they had just met recently. And the woman said, "Well, I haven't heard from her." And Robert had to tell her that Annette had died. And the woman was very, very impacted by that. And that because Annette had become such an important part of her life. So there was this gift that Annette had to make a connection, to really touch people's heart in so many, many ways. I'll just share briefly some of the things that I received. So when I heard that she had died and I experienced the impact, it's like, I think Amraku Sensei might have said, "Well, give a Dharma talk about that." So I thought, oh, let me go find her correspondence, and well, I couldn't find the ones I was looking for, but I went back to a box where I saved all my cards from when I was Shusso, and I had forgotten that she had sent me a card because I didn't know her that long at that point. So I pulled it out. This was just this morning. So this is the card that arrived with all this images of men and women dancing. You know, it was just joy all around it. And when you open it, it says, "I wish I could call all the stars out to dance just for you." Just for you. And the card just opens up, you know, a lot of color and dancing. You know. And then she says, at that time I was going by my birth name, she says, and it's dated 5 December 2005. She says, "Dear Hilda, thoughts of you and your path bring joy to my heart and tears to wash my soul. My energy will bless you on the 12th as you achieve yet another gate. Remember," and she's quoting here, "those who hear not the music think the dancer's mad." With all my heart, Annette. This is a friend I never met. In August of 2006, unexpectedly, I was in Washington, D.C., because I was staying that summer in the Jersey Shore, and I had been wanting to see this exhibit at the Smithsonian called The Return of the Buddha. And the day before, I looked at the New York Times, and it was closing the next day. So that morning, I got up very early, took a train to New York City, then took the Amtrak to Washington, D.C. to go see this exhibit. I said, I'm going to meet Annette. So when I got there, I called, and I got her machine. And I said, "I'm just calling to tell you I'm in D.C. here just for a few hours, and I just wanted to see if we can meet." And yet we never did. So I was thinking about all of this, you know, the last week and a half. And then I spoke to Robert, and he told me about a web page where I could go to where her journey is detailed. Right? But the most significant thing is that toward the last 3 or 4 years, for sure, the letters were less. But they were always arriving at the time, at the change of season, right? So holidays in winter, and then in the spring, and then summer, you know, around solstice, and then again, you know, in the fall. So I had received a correspondence from her last spring, and it's not like I answered right away. You know, I would carry it with me for some months, and then I would sit down and I would write. She awoke in me this deep desire and love that I have for putting ink to paper and writing to friends, which I do 3 or 4 times a year. So I was carrying with me her, might have been her summer correspondence, or perhaps spring, but I had it at Campo Abbey. And this fall, I wrote to her. And I didn't hear from her in the fall. Right? And I got caught in my own, you know, busyness and pettiness and so forth, stories and what life brings to us. And fall went by and holidays went by and I didn't hear from her, but she was in my mind. But it wasn't like I did anything about it, you know. It was almost like, oh, I know I've written to her and eventually I'll hear from her. And we came back in January, and it's like, Yeah. But it never occurred to me that she would have died. You know, she had the cancer had gone into remission and come back and so forth and go into remission, and you know, so she was dealing with this. But she would write the last few correspondences was about, you know, going on vacation, and you know, her life was going on, her garden, you know, and so forth. So when I received this, it's like, you know. So when I spoke with Robert, I said, you know, I last wrote her, I think it was, you know, either late summer or early fall. You know, and I was aware I hadn't heard from her. And he said, yes. He said, that's why I wanted to write you. That's why I wrote you, because I found your last correspondence in her pile of to be answered. Right. So there were two things I wanted to share with you. There was a poem in the back of her of in celebration of Annette program that it felt so powerful because I felt that she lived what this poem says. She knew about this. It's by David White from The House of Belonging. And the poem says, "You must learn one thing. The world was made to be free in. Give up all other worlds except the one to which you belong. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you." So, why this grief for someone I never met? Who knows? Does it matter, the answer? Why do we invoke Kanzeon when a loved one passes? Who knows? Does the answer matter? When we chant, pure, joyful, pure, eternal being, are we invoking Kanzeon? Or are we actually reminding ourselves of our true essence? When I think about I read recently by an author who works with death and dying, that there were four tasks that are important to attend to in dying and living. And this task, the first one is to the need to understand suffering and find ways to transform our suffering. And I'm aware that Annette was able to do this. So one of her affirmations was, that she worked with was, "I'm given the circumstances I require for my awakening. Every situation seen rightly contains the seeds of my freedom." According to this writer, the second task in living and dying is to heal our relationships, make a connection, and let go. Yeah. And this is something that Annette embodied. She made so many connections that it was said that she was an extraordinary friend and mentor. And cards for birthdays, anniversaries, and other occasions arrived ahead of time, often accompanied by a handwritten note with a newspaper or magazine clipping. Right? And then it says, she had so many friendships and they were long-standing, and she had a special gift for mentoring young women, entrepreneurial business people and craftsmen, that one grateful shop owner in particular named a dessert after her, Annette's Raspberry Bar. And then the third task, you know, in living and dying, is to understand what death is and to prepare spiritually for death throughout our lives. And then that long span, you know, of her work battling cancer, and that over and over and over seemed to have risen to that occasion. Yeah. And the last task, it says, for us to prepare in living and dying is the need to find meaning in our lives. Now, I did not have the opportunity to ever have a conversation with Annette to inquire as to whether that happened for her, right? Yes, I have a hunch that her answer would have been yes. Because her being in my life through all these miles of ink on paper definitely has brought meaning to my life. So joyful, pure, eternal being, that is how I want to remember this friend that I never met. Thank you very much.